welcome to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're broadcasting from the Santa Fe Baking Company on Cordova Road and streaming on the web at ksfr.org. We are podcasting at the website santafe.radiocafe.org, where you can hear the show whenever you want, thanks to Dotfoil Computer Services, and you can subscribe to the show on iTunes. Later on in the program, we're going to be speaking to Diane Granito, founder of the Heart Gallery, and Linda Siegel will join us with the legislative update. Right now, I'd like to welcome Tim Rogers. He's the chief curator of the New Mexico Museum of Art, and he's curator of the exhibition Pulling Strings, the Marionettes and Art of Gustav Baumann, which opens this Friday, January 30th, from 5:30 to 7:30 at the Museum of New Mexico, the New Mexico Museum of Art on the plaza in Santa Fe. Welcome.
Hi.
It's great to have you. Now, Gustav Baumann is known primarily as a printmaker who makes those probably familiar to many people beautiful multicolored woodblock prints.
Correct. And I would say that he did devote a great deal of his career to making those prints. And the skills that he developed while he was making the prints, particularly the wood cutting, is something that he then kind of used to great advantage when he was making the marionettes. But the marionettes aren't nearly as well known. They were at one time here in the Santa Fe community, but I'm afraid that was about 50 or 60 years ago.
So he was born in Germany, came to the United States as a young person, and then as a young adult came to Santa Fe and basically lived the rest of his life here.
That's correct. He didn't plan on it that way. He was interested in New Mexico. He came down here at the urging of several of his artist friends. He stayed in Taos for a while and then decided to come down and look at Santa Fe. He liked what he saw, but he had debts and other commitments in Chicago area, so he was going to go back, and the museum curator at the time, my museum, offered to help him get a loan from a bank. They walked across the street, got a loan, and he stayed, and he worked in the basement of our museum. That was his first studio here in Santa Fe.
And was he already making, when did he start making the marionettes?
He didn't start making the marionettes until about 1931. That was after he'd been married for a few years, and he had a daughter. They had one child, and when she was about the age of five, he started to make the marionettes, and then the theater, the backdrops, the clothing, the scripts, everything. And it really did start to become a very important part of his career in the 1930s. But that was relatively late, because remember, he moved here in about 1917, and so this was a later development in his career.
When you say his career, I mean, the marionettes, it seems when I had the great privilege of going over to the exhibition in progress, which is being set up, and which is going to be fantastic, and seeing them, but they're very much, they're not so much, let's make art objects. It's more like, let's entertain ourselves and our friends and our family in our living room.
Exactly. You know, this was a time before people had TVs, before even radio shows were as common and numerous as they are today. And so people really needed to entertain themselves. His wife was also a professional actress and opera singer, and so she came by the stage naturally. And so I think it was a good combination. It allowed them to bring people and friends into their living room for practices, for little exhibitions where he'd show off his new marionettes. He would introduce new writers, and they would perhaps write scripts for him. And so it really did create a whole community for them around the marionettes.
The marionettes seem like they were at least partially a German influence. There's a lot of puppet theater and things like that in Germany, and some of them really bear a resemblance to a kind of German art.
Definitely. As you mentioned, he was from Germany, and he came to the United States at the age of 11, but then he went back to Germany when he was in his late teens, early 20s, for a year of study there. And we know that he did wood carving there, of course, to make his woodcut prints, but he also did wood carving in the sense that he created a whole Bavarian village. And there's a very, very strong tradition, and it's alive to this day in Germany, of making very elaborate carvings of toys, of people, of art, the whole range of experience as expressed in wood. And so definitely that must have had a very profound influence on him. And you're right, they have a, shall we say, a slightly dark quality to them. If people haven't seen the Baumann marionettes, you know, they should be prepared. While this is definitely meant for the entire family, nonetheless, the marionettes have a slight darkness to them. It's not all joy and light, and the scripts reflect that.
Well, most good stories, with the exception of maybe, well, even I suppose even Disney stories are not all joy and light either. Otherwise, you don't have a story.
Exactly. But, you know, you think about, like, Hansel and Gretel, for instance, you know, generally now in even Disney stories, but you're right, they always have, like, a slightly evil person, but generally we don't threaten to bake our children. We have kind of lightened it up a little bit.
Yeah, right.
And
these, or have wolves eating them.
Exactly. But the witch that's in one of these scenes definitely looks like she could do some evil if she wanted to. And some of the duendes that are little, like, brownies or sprites, well, they ultimately do good. They look like they could get up to some bad, too.
We're talking to Tim Rogers about the exhibition that's opening this Friday, Pulling Strings, The Marionettes and Art, the Marionettes and Art of Gustav Bauman at the New Mexico Museum of Art. So, it's interesting, the duende, that is a Spanish word, and he draws not only on German and other European traditions, but on the local Spanish, Hispanic, Santa Fe stories and spirits.
Exactly. He was very much enamored by the numerous cultures here in New Mexico, and he participated as much as he could in those cultures. So, for instance, he met his wife, actually, at one of the Indian dances, and so his very first introduction to her was when she was helping to participate in one of the Indian dances. Later on, she became known as a drummer, and actually would, you know, play the drum and sing as well. So his involvement with the culture here was deep. He went on to do the restoration and the recreation of the statue that's in the Cathedral of the Virgin Mary. And so he was involved with the Hispanic culture, Native American culture, and then all of the people who were living here from a variety of different places around the world. He was really at the hub of social life in Santa Fe during the 20s, 30s, and 40s. I would say with Will Schuster, the two of them, they were a major social force here.
So who were his friends among the well-known Santa Fe art crowd, so to speak, of that era?
Well, Will Schuster definitely was one of his close friends, and the two of them collaborated and created Zozobra. Generally, Gustav Bauman isn't as remembered, but if you look at Zozobra, it's rather like a large marionette, and it
That's
also has
true.
A dark side to it, as we all know, and you'll see that kind of resonance, I think, in a number of the marionettes. And so he was really a partner in the creation of Zozobra, but as I said, Will Schuster is generally remembered now. He was also very good friends with Walter Uther, who spent more time in Taos, but he also came down here as well. And he was also old friends, with Julius Rolshoven, and once again more Taos-based than Santa Fe-based, but he remained in contact with all of them as well.
It's interesting that there's a little German artistic subculture around here.
Exactly. And it is one of the things that he wrote about in an essay that he did for our magazine El Palacio near the end of his life, kind of a remembrance. And one of the things that he remembered was that after World War I, there was a great deal of anti-German sentiment in the United States, and so you needed to kind of mask your German heritage. But once you discovered someone else who was also with the German heritage, you bonded quickly because you had this kind of repression and or oppression in common, and it was something then that allowed you to speak the language, for instance, talk about, you know, where you were from, talk about your heritage, your background, all of those things that were really not allowed in general public after World War I.
Let's talk about some of the actual scripts and stage sets that made up the marionette plays that he and his family and friends actually performed. Can you tell us the story of Tia Sucia?
Yes, one of my favorites. And from what I can gather, this was written by one of his friends and not by the Baumans. This was common. The Baumans seem to have written a number of the scripts. And by Baumans, I mean his wife, Jane, and Gustav. They wrote them together. And then they seem to change them every time they perform them, from what I can tell from one of the scripts. And they would do that in relation to the performers, who would sometimes improvise. So this is a story that was written by a friend of theirs, and it involves the characters that already existed, and that would be mainly the Duendes, a woman, and in this case we've decided to use the figure of his wife Jane, and a witch. And the witch appears in a number of different scripts.
Now, he carved a marionette of his wife, one of his daughter, and one of himself. They appear as characters in their little dramas.
Exactly, and there are some plays that are written specifically for just those characters. And so it must have been kind of an inside family jokes and conversation that was occurring at the time. But this one, and I don't know, perhaps his wife kept a dirty house for all I know, so maybe this is an inside story too. But this is about a woman who keeps a dirty house. And so the Duendes come to visit her, and they mess up her
house
more.
Being the little Spanish sprites.
Exactly, the little sprites or fairies or brownies, whatever, you know, kind of culture you come from. And they come to mess up her house, not, you know, just to create evil, but with the hopes that she will recognize this and pick up her own house. But instead, she doesn't, and she just thinks they're making it worse. And so she goes to the witch for help. Now, the witch can see the Duendes. Everybody else cannot. And so that's one of the things that makes this story fun, is all the children and people in the audience, they can see the Duendes too, but this woman can't. Well, the witch comes, and she tries to get rid of the Duendes, but in reality, she also wants to cast a spell on the woman so that she can take over her house. The Duendes figure this out, and they decide that they're going to help the woman. And so they do.
So first they're messing up her house, but then they turn around and feel sorry for
exactly.
her, and they're helping her.
Because they just wanted her to pick up her house and be neat. They didn't want her to lose her house.
Right.
So they get the spell removed through lots of elaborate storytelling. But they get the spell removed, and they cast the witch off, and the woman comes to recognize that they're there for good, and she needs to clean her house, and she's going to do so. So she does at the end.
I'm sorry, this sounds very, very German.
It does. Well, you know, it's one of those things that probably wouldn't make the best Disney movie anymore.
Really?
At one time was a common theme for children. You know, pick up, clean up, you know, don't keep a dirty house.
Very much so. So the actual manipulation of marionettes is kind of it's not exactly a lost art. There are still people who do it. There was a tremendous Hollywood movie called Team America World Police, and which I love, which all the characters are marionettes, and so there's still people, but it must be kind of a rare skill to be able to stand above these little puppets that are on strings and make them do realistic human and animal gestures.
It is, and it's something that requires a lot of rehearsals. The play that we're going to be performing during the run of the exhibition, and that'll be the first Sunday of every month starting in February, at 1 o'clock and 2 o'clock. That play was written and performed at Christmas as part of our Christmas tradition at the museum, where we present one of the Bauman stories. And we had to do this because we couldn't perform a different script every first Sunday. It would have been too much for the performers because it does take a long time. I mean, unless you've done it, you don't realize that, you know, just getting their hands to move in a realistic fashion, that's not easy. And so when you're trying to get them to walk and speak or look like they're speaking, emote in ways that appear realistic and not just kind of haphazard. In other words, you can just kind of jerk them around, but that's not going to look right. I mean, you have to use very subtle gestures, and that requires a great deal of practice.
It also requires that each of the marionettes be strung in such a way that the kind of movements that that puppet is going to do are possible with the stringing.
Exactly. It's one of the things that our senior conservator, Maureen Russell, has really helped me understand, is that not all marionettes are created equally. As a matter of fact, they're all very different and unique. And Bauman, in particular, he strung his marionettes so that they would be able to do very specific movements and motions that would be unique to that character. So, for instance, Pecos Bill, when he walks, he's carved to look like he's bow-legged, but he also, the way he's strung, helps convey the impression of someone kind of bow-legged walking across the stage. And that's a unique movement to him. And so
you have to, the string's the right length and attached to the right parts of the marionette's body.
Exactly. And then you have to have an airplane, and that's the device up on top that brings all the strings together.
It looks like a kind of X-shaped piece of wood.
Exactly. And that then has to correspond and work with the motions that you want to create. And so each of those are hand-carved and unique as well. At least the ones that came to us. Unfortunately, some of the airplanes got lost over the years before they were given to the museum, and so we've had to recreate them. And that was part of the immense amount of conservation that went on for the show.
Now, you have a wonderful piece of luck in the awesome person of Maureen Russell, who's not only a great conservator, but she's a marionette person herself.
Exactly. And this, I must say, was just happenstance and good fortune on our part. She comes to us from Los Angeles, where she had been at the County Museum there for a number of years. And when I first met Maureen, well, shortly after I met her, I was at her house, and she mentioned that she collected marionettes and that she had about 150 and that she had been collecting and working with marionettes since she was a child and actually written articles on their care and conservation. And eventually, I'm a little slow, but eventually I remembered that we had a lot of beautiful marionettes in storage that we couldn't display because of conservation needs. And I thought, well, if ever there was a marriage, this is it.
Right.
And so eventually we got it to happen.
And so I mean, there's not only the marionettes, which were in, I guess, kind of mediocre shape, given that they'd been in a garage and not well taken care of after the death of Gustav Bauman. But then there's also the stages themselves and the backdrops, which are paintings that Bauman made, and all kinds of things. And all of those were also in various stages of disrepair and neglect.
Exactly. These were created to be used. And that's different than a lot of other forms of art, that even some art, of course, it doesn't receive good care, but it's not under constant use. And the Bauman marionettes were. And so when we received them, they had been used for a number of years, and then they had been put in storage, as you said, in the garage and in other places. We're not even sure. And so when we received them, they were in kind of tough shape. What allowed us to conserve them and bring them back is the fact that they were so incredibly well-crafted. Bauman was of the old school of craftsmanship, and this was something that he learned in Germany and he brought with him to his work here in the United States, is that he created these things to last. And they weren't just temporary. I've seen a lot of marionettes, and some of them are made out of paper mache and other materials, and you know,
paper mache is meant to return to the earth as
exactly.
quickly as possible.
and it does. But these are all hand-carved out of wood based on elaborate drawings and patterns that you'll see in the show. And then they're painted very carefully with layers of paint. And the clothing was created very beautifully with a great deal of workmanship by his wife for the most part. And so
who was an opera singer and who had a sense of costume probably
exactly.
more than most of us.
Exactly. And a really nice sense of materials from what I can tell. So all of that allowed us to be able to conserve them and bring them back. But it has been at least a solid two years of work to get this to happen. And the backdrops had to go off to another conservator in Denver, where she's been working on those for the last 6 months, trying to get rid of dirt. A lot of it was dirt, some water staining that occurred, and some in-painting that needed to be done because there was a loss of surface. Not too much of that, fortunately.
One of the things that's striking about Gustav Bauman when you look at both his prints and these marionettes is this incredible sense of patience that you have to have. When you're doing a woodblock print with six or God knows how many different plates,
yeah.
you know, one of which has a few leaves on it, and you print that in green, and one of them has, I mean, the amount of craftsmanship and patience, and then with these incredibly beautifully hand-carved marionettes with the faces that have expressions. I mean, there's one figure in one of the little scenarios that you have set up of a drunk, which I swear to God is the person that I've seen downtown on more than one occasion. I mean,
we won't mention names.
Right? I don't know. You know. But here. They're so beautifully realistic, and I mean they're sculptures like any other sculpture.
Exactly. No, he was an incredibly patient man. His daughter, when we interviewed her in the 1990s and made a videotape of the interview, she said that he would go to work just like a banker every day. Even though he worked in his home, in his studio, she did not see him. They were not allowed to go out there, only at set times.
They weren't allowed to go into the studio.
No.
Interesting.
For only small periods of time. And when he finished something, he would bring it in and present it. And so there is a sense that, you know, this is a full-time job. And I think sometimes people have slightly romantic notions of the life of an artist. In reality, he approached it like a plumber or electrician or banker, anybody who had very set hours that needed to work, you know, a good 8 to 10 hours every day.
We're talking to Tim Rogers, chief curator of the New Mexico Museum of Art, about the upcoming exhibition Pulling Strings, the Marionettes and Art of Gustav Bauman, which opens this Friday, January 30th, at the New Mexico Museum of Art. Now, are there people alive in Santa Fe who in the old days manipulated the puppets or who were in the audience watching them?
Yes, and I'm hoping that in your listening audience there are people who were either manipulators, and that's kind of the official term for somebody that works a marionette, or who might have been audience members, might have been children at the time, who saw the original performances of the marionettes. If they're out there, please come to the opening, introduce yourself to me. I'd love to meet you and talk with you more. We have done some interviews with people who were manipulators, and one of our leadership council members, Susan Streeper, was a manipulator and knew the Baumans quite well and collected their work. And so she has given me more stories than the ones that she had given us already on the videotape.
Is that videotape going to be available for people to see?
I've edited the videotape. Not unfortunately. I mean, it was meant so that we would have a better understanding of the marionettes, but it is 3 to 4 hours long worth of interviews. So what I did was I edited just one section out of it, and what I edited out of it was actually the performance of the folk legend of San Isidro. So whenever you come to the show, you will be able to see a performance. Now, this will be a video.
Now, this wasn't in Bauman's lifetime that the performance was done.
No. Unfortunately, there's nothing that survives in terms of a recording of a performance during his lifetime. This was done in 1994. But it is using the original marionettes. It was the last time that a small group of them were performed. They've just become so fragile that we will no longer be able to perform them. And so when you do come to actual live performances the first Sunday of every month, you will see replicas. They're very good replicas. You'll have a hard time telling the difference, if at all. But nonetheless, they are replicas.
Now, one thing that has survived is a scrapbook, a bunch of scripts, and the backdrops themselves. So you are able to some extent, recreate or get a sense of what these performances were like.
Definitely. All of that information was necessary because, as I said, when we received the material, it wasn't as if somebody had been keeping a very close and careful archive of each and every object and making sure that it was well tended and cared for. Instead, it came to us like anybody else's kind of personal collection of things. And some pieces were missing. Some of the scripts are incomplete. The scrapbook is extremely helpful, but it doesn't give us photos of each and every scene that I know existed. And so that was part of the research that I had to do. For many months, and my colleagues at the museum will testify to this, I would carry around this very thick, it's like about 5 inches, notebook that contained all of the scripts. And I would go out to coffee and I would sit there and I would read at least, you know, a portion every day. Because it sounds like it would be fun reading the scripts, and in many ways
it was. I
was
going to say, it sounds like nice work if you can get it.
But they're incomplete, and his handwriting is atrocious.
Oh, goodness.
And so, you know, you get halfway into a scene, and then you turn the page, and it's not the next scene, and it's, like, so frustrating. You're like, okay, what did the witch do, and who is this character? Because it doesn't even necessarily belong to that story. So I had to try to sort some of that out as best I could.
So all of this is the art and the marionettes and art of Gustav Baumann. And one really gets a sense of he must have been a lovely person. And these shows that he did, they were always in his house, right? Mm-hmm. Must have been real delightful gatherings for the community.
I really think they were. Many people have spoken to me that have experienced or experienced the Baumann performances and said that his wife Jane was really socially very adept. She was, and as you would imagine, she was an actress, an opera singer. She was very outgoing, and she would bake, and it really was something that was special to the community. Baumann himself was a very nice man, but he was also very introverted. He was much more of kind of an artist personality, and I say that in the most stereotypic way, but somebody who was more introverted, spent a great deal of time alone in his studio working, but he enjoyed having people around him. He enjoyed the fact that his wife would kind of gather these people and allowed him to have a more active social life. For a long time, I mean, he was married late, I think around 40, he was a bachelor, and while he knew people, and he certainly had a social circle, it wasn't as wide as after he married.
So what happens, I mean, this exhibition is going to be going on for a while, but what happens after that to the marionettes?
Well, what we're going to do is that we have had for several years now an exhibition space upstairs in the museum. It's called the Women's Boardroom, devoted to Baumann and his work. And we've always had a small selection of his work, just because so many people come here from around the world to see the Baumanns. We have the world's largest collection of Baumann material. And so we wanted to have a selection on display. So we're going to take two of the stages. There's seven in the show. We're going to take two of them and put them upstairs with the marionettes, the backdrops, and all the material, just as you'll see in the exhibition, so that they will be on permanent display. And then we will change that entire exhibition space and put different prints up, etc. We'll probably put some of the drawings up that have been in the show. But we have to kind of change things out because there's a lot of work on paper and the marionettes are fragile. So you'll see some rotation occur up there. But we plan on having a permanent display of Baumann's work into the future.
Tim Rogers is chief curator of the New Mexico Museum of Art and curator of the exhibition Pulling Strings, the Marionettes and Art of Gustav Baumann, which opens this Friday, January 30th from 5:30 to 7:30 at the New Mexico Museum of Art on the plaza in Santa Fe. And Friday nights, it's free to the public.
Exactly. Free and open to the public. And we're going to have Freckles and Warts. They're two of the duendes. They will be there joining us. And so they'll be walking around in the crowd.
Freckles and Warts are two of the puppets that he made, but people are going to be dressed up like them.
No. We're going to have the replicas of Freckles and Warts. And they're literally going to walk around with
a manipulator. With a marionette manipulator. Oh, my goodness.
Attached to them. And they will talk to you and enjoy the opening with the rest of you. They tend not to eat as much as some of you, but nonetheless.
That's right. Then there's more for the eaters among us.
Right.
Tim Rogers, thanks so much for being with us.
Well, thank you.
We're going to take a break right now, and when we come back, we're going to be talking about the Heart Gallery. Please stay tuned to KSFR.